the earthquake. Mm-hmm. But then I decided not to spend a lot of time on the earthquake. Because we've already spent two weeks on Isaiah Azayahu, so I thought we'd move on. Although I just wanted to give you just a taste of the references of the earthquake that that Isaiah sees. So the first one is in Amos. So if you open up to Amos, who is the second of the Treasar, the second of the 12. News before it's the third. It's Hosea, Yoel, and then Amos. So it starts off and it's sort of right. It's right up there,
somewhere around 690.
Right,
I don't know where we're going.
Chapter one, verse one. Yeah.
Oh, right from the beginning.
Well,
strange places.
Right?
Yeah.
687. Divrei Amos, the words of Amos, Asher Hayab Vanoktim, who was among the shepherds, Mitikoa. Who live in Tekoa, Asher Chazal Yisrael, Bimei Uziah Melech Yehuda, Uvimei Yeravam Ben Yoash, Melech Yisrael Shnataim Lefnei Harash. So this was the vision that he saw during the kingship of Yeravam the second and Uziahu, 2 years before the earthquake. And I think the very fact that they don't tell you what earthquake it was means that it was a given. It's like the word 9/11 is today. You don't have to give more information. It's simply a known. So it must have been quite the earthquake that was seen. So that's the first reference. That's the first direct reference that there was an earthquake during Uzziahu's time, which was a landmark experience. The second one is from the last of the prophets, Zechariahu. I guess Ezra is arguably the last of the prophets, but the last of the Treasar is Zechariah. Is the very end of Treasar, and the very last chapter, chapter 14. I guess Malachi really is the last, so I should say the second to last. The three prophets, Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi, are all Second Temple prophets. They came back from the exile from Babel to help rebuild the Second Temple. So it's chapter 14. What page is that in?
721.
20. Okay. So I'll just read through it just to get a little more of a taste. Hine Yom Baal Hashem, the day of the Lord is coming. The Chulak, that has a very eschatological intent, that is messianic times. The Chulak Shlalech B'Kirbeich. I'm not sure exactly how to translate. Chulak Shlalech, your booty, your spoils will be divided amongst you. The Asafti Kol Agoyim El Yushalayim, and I will gather together all the nations to Jerusalem LaMilchama for war. V'nilkada Ha'ir, and the city will be captured. V'nashasu Habatim, and the cities and the houses will be destroyed. V'nashim Tishakhavna, and the women will be slept with. V'yatzach Hatzi Ha'ir Bagola, half of the city will go out in exile. V'yeter Ha'am Lo Yikaret Min Ha'ir, and the rest of the city will not be exiled. The rest of the nation will not be exiled from the city. Keep in mind that he's prophesying this during the second temple times, not first temple times. So we're not talking about Babel here. You must be talking about some other experience. So you could argue it's Rome, or you could argue that we're talking about the fall of Jerusalem during the second temple time. But I think most would simply go for the third temple time.
Yeah.
What's that? V'yatzah Adonai v'nilcham b'goyim, and God will go out and fight with them. What's that?
You're looking for the earthquake?
Oh, yes. I wanted to get sort of a flavor. I hope you don't mind, because instead of a one-liner, this way I could leave West Orange knowing that I've taught a little bit of Zechariahu. Well, on Zechariah right now. We'll get back to Malachim in a bit. I'm just reading about the earthquakes. B'yom hilachamo b'yom krav, amdu raglav b'yom ahu al har zeitim, and he will stand his feet. I mean, this is talking about God. So you're talking about a lot of, this is very much the Chayyahu. It's very, very mystical, very apocalyptic, exactly right. A lot of anthropomorphism. Asher al pnei Yerushalayim mikedem, you know, apocalypse in a real sense. That is, apocalypsis means uncovered or revealed. The English translation is revelations. Because the prophets themselves didn't know what they were seeing. So while it sounds a lot cooler, it was actually an indication that they were able to interpret less. Chazal say that about Yechezkel. We always think that Yechezkel's prophecy of the cherubim is the greatest prophecy, but Chazal, I wouldn't say all Chazal, but there certainly is an opinion in Chazal that he was like a farmer compared to Yeshayahu, who was a real prophet. That is, his prophecy of the Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh was much more than Yechezkel's prophecy of the chariot. The sense being that the more imagery you need to understand what God's talking about, the less you're able to understand it peh al peh. For instance, Moshe didn't need much imagery. There's a little, al kanfein sharim, you have a little bit of imagery there, but mostly Moshe's describing his prophecy as is. He doesn't need a lot of imagery to try to figure out what God is trying to say. The more imagery you have in the prophecy, even though it's more exciting and more fun to look into, everybody loves Sefer Daniel. Daniel says himself at the very end, he says, I don't understand what I saw. I saw this, I saw the beast, I had a horn, I had no clue what I saw. And no clue, he couldn't sleep. Then an angel, I think it was Gabriel, came over to him, explained to him what it was, because he was unable to understand what his prophecy was all about. So the more imagery... What's that? No, because who knows? I mean, the question is, did he even understand what that was? He does a chishuva ketz, he tries to figure out when the Messiah will be coming, but nobody knows for sure. And he says himself, actually the Rambam points out, the Rambam says everybody's busy trying to figure out when the end of days are coming. Daniel says himself he can't figure it out. So if Daniel can't figure it out, how are we supposed to figure it out? You can play games all you want, but Daniel didn't understand his own prophecy. So the more imagery is not necessarily the sharper prophecy, although it is fun to read. V'amdu ragla b'yom ahu al har ha-zeitim, so God will stand, Yerushalayim mikedem, v'nivka har ha-zeitim, and zeitim will, har ha-zeitim, like you all image that if you're standing by the Kotel, so you're looking on, so that's where all the graves are, as you're looking east, towards the Jordan River, so there's that mountain that sits above Har Abayit. Mechetzio mizracha v'yama gei gdola ma'od, there'll be this gigantic earthquake with a gigantic crack, u'mash chatzi ahar tzafon v'chatzi negba, and it will split north and south. Literally, the mountain will collapse, one to the south, one to the north. V'nastem gei harai, apparently that will happen, well, I don't know for sure, I'm not an expert on Zechariah, and I just want to sort of give a flavor and not go into it too much in detail, but I assume that will happen when the enemy troops will be camped there in Har Zeitim, which means it will be bad news for the enemies. I think that's what's going on here. That is, they'll lose entire troops. That is, God will, what it says is after all those troops come and wind up exiling half the city of Jerusalem, then God will come out and fight, and he'll smatter the Har Zeitim and split it one way or the other way. I can only assume that that's for our benefit.
You shall flee into the valley.
Yeah, that's true. V'nastem gei harai, yeah, ki yagia gei harim el atzal, v'nastem kasher nastem tnei arash. You're right. So it's not a positive thing. Maybe this is part of the earth. Maybe this is part of the attack. Yeah, you're right. And here's, of course, the earthquake, which is you will run like you ran at the times of Uzi al-Melech, uva adunai lohai, kol ha-kadoshim imach. And God will take all of the holy with him. So the event was not only so known, it was known in Zechariah's time, which is 200 years later, and apparently they're giving us more information that we didn't know, which is that the people were so bad that people essentially fled from Jerusalem because the earthquake was so strong and so bad. I mean, today we can imagine such things. We can, we have, thanks to news, every once in a while you get an earthquake, which is that massive that it really causes total devastation. Yeah, that's right. So I wonder what this would get. What's interesting, of course, it's also interesting, and there's a point I guess I get back to often, which is that the Torah, Navi's not a history book. Yirmiyahu doesn't mention it at all. We have no clue that there was an earthquake. All we know is that he did something bad, and that was the end of his career. We never know why he... We get a hint that he went into the Beit HaMikdash and something bad happens there, but we don't know about the earthquake. Yeshayahu only hints at the earthquake when he says, Kadosh, 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 where he sees that the Amot HaSifim, which are the pillars that are holding up the Beit HaMikdash, start to shake. That gives us a sense of an earthquake, but even there you wouldn't know what was going on. Yeshayahu also does not feel like telling us about the historical fact. Then in Amos we find out that there is an earthquake, but we have no idea what was going on. And only in Zechariah, we know what... Of Uzziahu. That's correct. Yes, exactly right. And when you put all of that together, you come up with the idea that at the time, that's what Chazal do, and I think it's a correct interpretation, although you have to tie the piece together, that when he was in the Beit HaMikdash, when he was trying to give the Korban, not only did he break out in... So Chazal embellished a little bit, because they say if he punished him with the Tzarat, and he had to run away because of the Tzarat, what do you need the earthquake for? So apparently he tried to have the Kohanim killed. And when he tried to have the Kohanim killed, then God sent an earthquake to prevent the Kohanim from being killed, and then he ran out of the Beit HaMikdash because he had no choice. Of course, this is, you have to read between the lines. There's no there's no real information. And Yeshayahu himself doesn't really, he tells us there was a shaking of the pillars, and we know it has to do more or less with something to do inside the Beit HaMikdash, but we just don't have enough information. Yirmiyahu gives us zero, Yeshayahu gives us a hint, Amos gives us a fact, and Zechariah tells us that it was a cataclysmic event that caused the emptying of Jerusalem, at least for a period of time. Put all these things together, and then you get a little bit of history, but you can only, it's piecemeal at best. It's piecemeal at best. Anyway, so that's essentially the...
I think if there's an earthquake, it's smart to leave the area where there are lots of stones.
Yeah, I suspect.
Stone structure. So I don't know that the people were, you know, being flung here and there. They're, you know, it just may be smart, you know, when there are earthquakes now, people leave their homes, they go out in a clear space, you know, if there's some buildings that are crashing down, they want out of the city.
Right. Well, was the guy
there's
then
a
meant
lot
to say...
Destruction and death, too.
Yeah.
The last
Which,
one in Iran, I think it was, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, tremendous amount, but you never find out exactly how much because... And then there was one in Uzbekistan that... I was getting political on that also, but I don't want to get off on a political jaunt because people were really getting down the United States government without Katrina. But, you know, I bet there's still people sitting in... in Uzbekistan after that earthquake that was like a year ago with no help, no water, no nothing. But we don't know about it because obviously the government's not, I guess the government doesn't release pictures and it's too difficult to get to.
Well, we don't know how many dead are in New Orleans either. They're still finding
about it. Yeah. It's true, disasters. So apparently there's another one in wait. And then there's a famous pasuk, by the way, just take a look a little further in verse 9, Vayah Adonai l'melechah ha'aretz, Vayomer hu yeh Adonai echadish mo'achad. So now you know what you're reading. That's the yom they're talking about. That's the day when everybody's going to recognize God, which is not necessarily a good or bad thing, which is what Amos says. Amos has this thing about those who desire the day of God are maybe being a little bit foolish.
Yeah.
Well, he says that. Are you familiar with that? That's in Amos, if we go back to Amos, what page was that? About 700 or so?
Almost
680. So if you look back in Amos, I think it's Perek. It's Hoy Hamitavim Biyom Hashem. That is, try to find it. Ki Yom Ze Choshech Velo Or. I have to learn my. Oh, here it is. It's in chapter 5, verse 18. Chapter 5. What page is that? Chapter 5, verse 18? Hoya metavim et yom Hashem. Oy to those who desire the day of God. Lama zelachem yom Hashem. What do you want it for? Hu choshech velo or. It'll be darkness and not light. Kasher Yanus Ish Mipnei Ari, like it'll be like a man who runs away from a lion, Ufgao Adov, and he runs straight into a bear. Uva Bayit, he makes it to the house, Vesamach Yado Akir, and he puts his hand on the wall, on Shacho Anachash. I think we call that from the frying pan into the fire in modern language. Halo Choshech Yom Adonai Velo Or, Vafel Velo No Galo. It's a very similar image that Zechariah was. That Zechariah was saying, but what's interesting is he didn't have the ability to base on the earthquake that he hadn't seen yet, because it's 2 years before the earthquake takes place, as opposed to Zechariah that has the ability to understand references to past history, I guess. Anyway, let's go back to Sefer Malachim, and we have about a half an hour left, so we could cover a good deal of territory there. And we're going to the truth is, I'm hoping today to finish off the Northern Kingdom, as nasty as that sounds, but there it is. So verse Malachim Bet, chapter 15, I think. It's funny, verse 15:1 to 15, sorry, chapter 15, verse 1 to verse 6 is Uzziahu, who ruled for 51 years. So So although probably only about 38 of them were active rule, but the most powerful king of his time, and he gets all of 7 psukim. Going on to verse 8. This is the son of Yeravam the second. The Shnat Shloshim, and it was in the 38th year of Azariah Melch Yudah, Malach Zechariah ben Yeravam al Yisrael b'Shomron Shishach Hodashim. So the son of Yeravam the second, this is chapter 15, verse 1. So he rules for all of 6 months, which means he will not be dying in bed. Or he may be dying in bed, but not happily, not of a good old age. Vayasara b'nei Hashem, he did evil in the eyes of God. Kasher asu avotav, lo sar mechatot Yeravam ben Nevat Ashechti Israel. So first of all, it's very interesting. It accuses him of doing the same sins, as causing the Jews to sin, just like Yeravam the first. That's always a formula for ego worship. Well, what's interesting here is he doesn't really have enough time to be bad. There's not much he could really do in 6 months. So to a certain degree, it's formulaic. What it means, I think, is that he allowed the people to worship as they, he kept the status quo as far as the governmental, as far as the religious attitude of the state, which was to allow worship at the Egel Zahav. He continued that, and that was the sin that he's being called for, even though he really didn't have enough time to do evil per se. Vayikshor alav shalom ben yavesh vayakeyu kaval am. So there was a conspiracy against him by the name of Shalom ben Yavesh, and he killed him, bless you. Kaval am. Kaval is very, very difficult to say what that is, but the Aramaic translation for lifnei is kabal, so therefore kaval seems to be in front of the nation. Vayimiteyu, bless you, vayimloch tachtav. So essentially he wipes out. Now this is the end of the Yehu dynasty. We had Yehu, we had Yehoachaz, we had Yoash, we had Yeravam the second, and now we have Yeravam's son who rules 6 months. That's it. End of the Yehu revolution. You really have, there's really nothing left. Where is Shalom from? We really don't know. We don't know where he's from. However, the fact that it says Ben Yavesh, my guess is that he is from Yavesh HaGilad, which were people who lived, Yavesh HaGilad was a great city that was on the other side of the Jordan River. It belonged to Dan, I believe, or maybe God. So what's interesting, by the way, is when you read a lot of the prophecies, right, but I think Yavesh may be a territory, like with Devorah. Devorah Eshet Lapidot. They say her husband's name wasn't really Lapidot, but that's what she did. So Ben Yavesh would be sort of like saying Ben Reuven or Ben David. It's more of a house symbol. Now, his father may have been called Yavesh, but we'll see that Yavesh is actually spelled a slightly different way further on. It sounds like a territorial name. There's no guarantee of that. If he wasn't from Yavesh, we have no idea where he was. But if you remember, at first there was tremendous pressure on the areas on the other side of the Jordan River. But with Uzziahu in the south and Yeravam of the north, they managed to take back quite a bit of that territory. Perhaps that allowed people to set up little fiefdoms of power and allow them to be powerful enough. Don't forget that Yehu, which is Yeravam, Zechariah's great-grandfather, was from Ramat Gilad. He's hanging out at Ramat Gilad, remember, and the Navi comes to him and says, you're going to conquer. I guess it's far enough that you're still in Israel proper, but you're outside of Israel enough to be able to stir up a little bit of ferment.
Wasn't Yavesh Gilad the scene of, was it Gidon who came and saved them?
It was Shaul who came and saved them.
Shaul.
I believe so, from a guy named Nachash Ahamoni.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right, which is why David went out to Yavesh Gilad and he tried to make a peace treaty with them right away because he knew that they could be his worst enemy. Yeah, it's a pretty famous city on the other side of the Jordan River. One question I have is why it says Kaval Am in front of the nation. It could be that it was like a setup, like they dragged him out and just did it in front of everybody, that it wasn't... Right. I can't say for sure. It's just a guess on my part. But why would it give that kind of detail? It could be because a lot of times when you think of conspiracies, you think of a knife in the dark. So apparently, you know, Shalom had moved in, you know, and set up a power base, and it was almost symbolic them dragging the king out and having him killed. No, he doesn't. So let's continue on. V'yet the divrei Zechariah inam tuim asefer divrei ayamin malchei Yisrael hu dvar Adonai asher diber Yehu lemor bnei revim yishivu l'chal kisei Yisrael v'yichen. It was, and so it was, which is Yirmiyahu is emphasizing that the prophecy that was given to Yehu was true, that we'd only have 4 generations of kids after him because Yehu did not wipe out he did not wipe out the eagle worship as he was asked to. Verse 13, Shalom ben Yavesh Malach b'shnat 39 shana l'Uziyahu, Melech Yudah, v'yimok yerech hamim b'shomron. He gets a month. Gets a month. It doesn't last long at all. And by the way, what's interesting is they don't say there's almost no information about him. He's in and out. Vayal Menachem ben Gadi mitirtza, vayavo Shomron. So there was a city of Tirtza, which I'll explain in a second. He comes to Shomron, and he wipes out, he smites Shalom ben Yavesh, where it's spelled slightly different. By the way, Yud Shen. V'Shomron v'imiteu v'yimloch tachta v'yeter divrei Shalom v'kishro asher kasha inem tuvim l'sefer divrei yonamalkei Yisrael. He gets 2-3 psukim all together, and that's it. So one king lasts 6 months, the next king lasts 1 month. It's a little bit like it's a very unstable situation. Now we don't know exactly.
It's not good to be the king.
No, not in these times. Now we don't know where Menachem ben Gadi comes from either. One could argue that Gadi is from Shevet Gad, which would also put him on the other side of the Jordan River. But Gadi is also a name that's known to us from the Meraglim. One of the Meraglim is named Gadi, which just means a baby goat. What's it called?
Gadi.
Oh, Gadi. Right. What's that in English?
Kid.
A kid. Right. So they called that was the kid. They called him Kid, like a spaghetti western. So that's it as far as he goes. And then who comes to power? So Az Yakeh Menachem et Tifsach. Oh, well, what's interesting is, he seemed to have a very successful month. Why? Because that was Shalom dies, right?
Yeah.
Menachem is the one who kills him. We'll see. Menachem will rule for 10 years. Az Yakeh Menachem et Tifsach veKol Asher Ba veKvuleh Mitirtza Kilo Patach vayach et Kol HaHaroteha Bikea. This is very important. So what he does, he goes up to Tifsach. Now, Tifsach is the sea that we know from Shlomo's time. It's way up to the northern border, which makes sense, because if you remember, Yeravam, this period of seven-month instability follows the tremendous rule of Uzziahu, who is still alive, although perhaps he is already under the plague, so to speak. In fact, for sure, he's under the plague. And Yeravam, they managed to conquer all the way in the northern territory, all the way deep into Syria, butting up against Assyria. Apparently what happened was, when Menachem ben Gadi took over, I would guess that the city of Tifsach, which was at the very northern border of Israel, said, forget it, we're not going with you. So what he did was, he took his troops all the way up to the northern border, and he broke open the city and said, you are not seceding from Israel. What's that?
In fact, you're not going to exist.
That's correct. Well, that's what, and then what happens, Vayachet kol ha-roteha bikeya, he ripped open all the pregnant women. Now, what's sad about this is that was a nevuah given to, I guess it was the policy, if you really want to wipe out the city. I don't know exactly what it means, to be honest. It sounds so brutal, it's hard to even let the mind rest on it. And I think that may be the point, although I'm not sure. That is, it was never prophesied that the Jews would do this kind of thing where they would kill pregnant people. Who was it given to? If you remember, that was given back to Hazael. Remember, Elisha shows up to Hazael and he starts crying? And Hazael says, why are you crying? And he goes, because I know what you're going to do to the Jewish people. You can do this, that. One of the things he was going to do is he was going to carve open pregnant women. And then he gets a good idea. He says, oh, I got a good idea. I'll kill my master Ben-Hadad, and then I'll take over the kingship. That was a prophecy that was seen on for the Syrian government to do. That was never a prophecy that was seen for that, you know, that a Jewish, that an Israelite would do. This kind of action, that he would go up into Syria and behave like a Syrian, I think is not a positive indication. I don't think that this is...
He ruled for 10 years.
Well, you Ahab ruled for 26. It's not always how firm you are. It's, guy's powerful is guy's powerful. Although 10 years isn't all that, to be honest, 10 years is not all that.
Month.
Yeah, that's true. It's better than a month.
And the rest of the acts of Shalom, not Menachem.
You're in verse 15? Well, what happens is everybody is interfering with everybody else's time. Usually you have a block that talks about King X, and then you have the end of King X. And then you have a block talking about X plus 1. The problem in all these cases is that X plus 1 is interfering with the rule of X. So what happened was, in Zechariah's time, that's Yerubim, the second son, so then Shalom came over and killed him. So he gets a little bit of press time in Zechariah's psukim, and then he gets his own few psukim. And then in Shalom's psukim, you get Menachem ben Gadi comes over and does a murder, and then he gets his own psukim. So essentially you get a little press time in both sections, in the previous guy's rulership as well as in your own rule, and that's why he shows up twice. Verse 17. Bishnat 39 shana Azariah Melech Yudah Malach Menachem ben Gadi al Yisrael. This is his press time. That is the pasuk beforehand, verse 16, wasn't his press time. It was actually still taking place during the irresolution who's going to be the king, who's not going to be the king. He actually went up, and by the way, that's why, here, take a look closely at verse 16. Azia kem menachem et tifsach ve'kol asher ba ve'kvulah mitir tzah. Do you see that? Do you see that phrase? That is, he was still in his own capital city of Tirzah. He had not yet taken over full rulership of Samaria in Shomron. So probably he had the previous king Shalom and Gadi killed after 1 month. But it takes a while to stabilize things. There were probably elements, forces in the city. So therefore, he actually acted as a power in Tirzah. And maybe that's why the people finally accepted him as king, because he showed that he was willing to fight for the interests of the northern state. We don't know that, but now Tirzah, by the way, is very interesting. It shows up in Shir Hashirim. Navaat Kirushalayim, I'm sorry, Yafaat Kirushalayim, Navaat Kitirzah. It's compared only next to Jerusalem as being the most beautiful city around. It was used before Achav purchases and sets up a capital city in Shomron. It was, in fact, the capital city of Israel, a very beautiful city, no doubt a powerful city. North, I think it would be, it's not already in the Galil, I think it's, I don't know if they listed here. What verse are we on? 15 verse 17, let me see if it listed here. I think it's, I don't know, I want to say 5 to 10 kilometers north of Shomron. Tirzah.
That's not so far north.
No, it's not that far. It was just became an ignored city. It's like, you know, people forget about it because the Shomron became the capital city, so the money starts flowing to Shomron, and people forget about Tirzah, regardless of how beautiful it was. Here it is. We'd have to look in Yeshua. That's where they mention it. They don't mention here where it is. A little bit north. Right, so that's the essentially the conquest of Menachem ben Gadi. Now in verse 17, that's where he's obviously accepted as the king of Israel, and he starts to rule in Shomron. Now what's really funny is Azariah is alive through all this. He rules for 52 years. So essentially he sees him come and he sees him go. Malach Menachem ben Gadi al Yisrael Esher Shanim Shomron. You have your best bet actually is probably
this has a map in it.
It does, and we'll have Tirzah. Okay. Vayas, how far north of Shomron?
Actually, it's north of Shechem.
But still south of Eimek Yisrael, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Right before you go down into here's Beit Shan. So essentially, it's right as you go down the mountains. And this little area is Amit, you can't see it because there's no topography here, but right before you go down to Valley, that's where it is. Probably the very northern part of what we call Harei Shomron, Samaria today. So he does the same thing, and he goes with the ego worship. Ba'ful melech Ashur al ha'aretz v'yitei menachem ful elef kikar kesef liyot yadav ito. So the king of Assyria comes. Now, what we've been seeing is that Yeravam was butting heads with Assyria, which is fine as long as you stay in power. But we're not in power, so Assyria starts to come your direction. I have to tell you something. This is very interesting. We actually have this in external documentations. But the king's name is Ful, but that was his nickname. That his Babylonian name was Ful. His Assyrian name was Tiglath-Pileser III. He's a famous king. Ful is, without any doubt, we have documentation on it. Now, I'm not talking about Jewish documentation. I'm talking about Assyrian and Babylonian documentation. Ful was Tiglath-Pileser III. We'll see he's going to cause so much trouble coming up. And he, in fact, there's a cuneiform tablet which says that Tiglath-Pileser came, and he took Menahemu of Sumaru, and he made him bow down to him, and he made him pay him money. So all of this that we're reading here is extremely well documented in external documentation as well. And what he did was essentially he bought him off. in order to support the government. Now here, what's that? Yeah, you know what a thousand talents is? It's about 3 tons. No, it's about 3 million shekel, which I believe is 3 tons of silver, if I'm not mistaken. That's a humongous amount of money. Where did he get the money from? Next pasuk in verse 20. Vayotzei Menachem et hakesef al Yisrael al giborei achayel latet lemelech Ashur 50 shekalim kesef. Everybody had to pay 50 silver pieces. Le'ish echad, for every man, I suppose, in the household. Vayashov melech Ashur v'lo amad sham ba'aretz. He took his forces out of Israel. He got the payoff. And he left, although what we're going to see, you're not going to see it so much here, you're going to see it later on, Yeshayahu's time, there's a lot of playing one against the other. In fact, there's going to be a Judean king that is being, you don't even, it's in chapter 7 of Yeshayahu, maybe if we have some time at the end, I'll point it out, where he's being, they're threatening to overthrow him, his name is Achaz, and he's a bad king, but they're threatening to replace him with another king, not of the Davidic line, who's going to go along with a treaty between the northern king of Israel and the Syrian king against Assyria. Tiglath-Pileser is too powerful. They're encroaching their territory. What do they say? Make strange bedfellows. Zneshi makes strange bedfellows. So northern Israel gets together with Syria, a guy by the name of Ratzin, and they try to join forces against Assyria. Yeshayahu comes and he tells Achaz, don't you dare. You will die if you do that. They will wipe you out too. So he's told to stay. But apparently, maybe we'll get time to do this. Apparently, there was internal forces in Yehuda that were like a real politics. They were forcing him, pressing him to take sides with Syria and with the northern king of Israel.
Syria is to the east or west.
To the north and then to the east. It's up. The capital city is Nineveh, or it's modern day Mosul in Iraq. And they marched through the Mesopotamia and then came down to the Syrian coast. The yet the Devei Menachem call Asher Asarah Elohim to you on Sefer Devei Hayamim the Malchei Yisrael by Yishkab Menachem Avotav v'Yimloch b'Kachyahu b'no Tachdav. Now we don't know how he dies because it never says he was assassinated. Never says. It simply says that he made his 10 years and then he disappeared. One assumes that he died in battle, bad choices, hard living, hard to exactly say. The Navi is not letting us know. But the bottom line is 10 years also is not a peaceful rule. Now the next guy's name is Pekach, to add to the confusion, right? The last guy's name was...
This one is
Pekach. I'm sorry, I apologize. The next guy's name is Pekachia, and we'll see after Pekachia comes a guy named Pekach, all incredibly confusing. Pekachia is actually the son of Menachem, which means he actually managed to deliver to the next in line, although it's only going to make 2 people, so you can't call it much of a dynasty. And he's going to get assassinated also, if I'm not mistaken. B'shnach ha-mishim shana la'azariyahu melech Yudah, Malach b'chachiyahu ben Menachem al Yisrael b'shomron shnatayim. He makes it 2 years. Vayasara b'nei Hashem lo sami chatot yirav ben nevar shechti Yisrael. Again, he's being drilled in over and over by Yirmiyahu. You want to know why the north fell? It was nothing else except the fact that they continued the eagle worship. Vayikshur alav pekach ben Ramayahu shalisho, his third in command. A shalish is probably like not your second in command, but your third in command. Vayakehu b'shomron b'armon beit melech. He came into the tower of the Beit HaMelech. Et Argov et Aryeh. Et probably there's im. With Argov and with Aryeh. There probably some kind of fighting units named the Argov, which is a piece of land. And Aryeh, the lions, hard to say who they were. V'imo chamishim ish mibnei Giladim. And with him he had 50 people from Gilad, which would be up in the Golan Heights across the Jordan River, Menasheh. Vayimiteu vayimloch totav, they kill him and they take over. V'yeter d'vei p'kachyahu v'chol asher hem asah nehem tovim osefer d'vei yamin malchei Yisrael. So probably he was a shalishav, so he was third in command. He probably had a close relationship. He probably had access to the tower where the king was, and therefore he simply had him off. He surprised him one day. He had 50 of his own countrymen with him, or tribesmen with him. He had apparently with him this group called the Argov and the Aryeh. They may have been the 50 people, it's hard to say.
Translation suggests that it's
a
geographical.
With et is Argov. By?
By Argov and the Aryeh.
Yeah, whatever that means. I mean, the Argov is a place name. We have a place called Argov in Israel, but Aryeh, I mean, I don't know what that means. It could be a gate. It could be the Argov gate and the Aryeh gate. We have heard of gates named Argov. The problem is that et doesn't really mean by. Et either means is a direct object, like I threw the ball, shalachti et ha kadur, or can mean with, hu alach et Hashem. So if you say it's with, then that seems to be the people that he's doing the killing with. Hard to say. I don't know if you have a different translations on that, but either way, a murder is afoot. So let's go over our kings. We have one king, the son of Yerubim the second makes it 6 months. Then he gets killed by a guy named Shalom. Shalom makes it 1 month. He's killed by a guy by the name of Menachem. Menachem managed 10 years, probably dies in battle, that's a good guess, unless he took over in an old age. Yeah, so they could have died in battle that way also. It means he wasn't murdered by assassination. But why does a king only make it 10 years? So one possibility is that he died in battle. Another possibility is he may have died of young age. It could have happened. Yeah. Or he could have died because he didn't take over until he was a very old guy, although, I don't know, usually assassins are a little bit younger. Although Menachem did have him dragged out, so maybe it was really part of, maybe it was more of a political thing. So maybe he was an older guy, it's hard to say. But his son, who takes over, named Bekachia, only makes it 2 years, and he's assassinated by a guy by the name of Pekach. Pekach kills Bekachyahu. Hard to say why that is. Maybe to add confusion or to make it seem like you're really the real king. I don't know.
He was the son of the Shalish.
Was the son of the Shalish?
The son of Remaliahu.
Oh. Yeah, let's go back to verse 25. Vayikshur alav Pekach ben Remaliahu Shalisho. Pekach, the son of Remaliahu, his captain. His captain is not necessarily referring to Remaliahu. It's probably referring to Pekach. It could be referring to either, right? It's always the problem. He was this, the son of that, the Navi. Could either mean both, could be, or it's one or the other. Usually it's the first. Right? For instance, if I say Shemen Zayet Hanishbach, it's not the Zayet which is Nishbach, it's usually the Shemen which is Nishbach. Usually when you have this of that, it's usually the this which is being described, although not always. So I would guess Pekach was the actual captain that had the ability to get in. And by the way, Menachem, who was apparently the ruler of Tirza, was also probably a serious general who had a duchy of Tirza, and he decided to have him killed as well. He certainly had enough troops that even before he got to Shomron to take over the official kingship, he was able to plunge deep into Syrian territory and destroy Tifsach. So obviously he wasn't just a guy who found a knife one day who had an attitude. He was a serious player, as all these people are serious players. B'shnah 52 shana l'Azariah melchidah malach Pekach ben Remaliahu al Yisrael b'shomron 20 shana. He rules 20 years. I have to tell you right now, it don't work out. You can't make the 20 years work out, because Israel will be destroyed in a much shorter period of time than 20 years. Northern Israel, it doesn't work out. What you have to say is that, you don't have to say it, but one likelihood is that Pekach was ruling simultaneously while Menachem was ruling, probably from the other side of the Jordan River, where we've seen so much trouble coming. Again, the years are always mixed up. You're not quite sure whether you're dating for Uzziah, or you're going to date after his sons. You're not sure who you're dating after. Probably Pekach was his own little powerhouse on the other side of the Jordan River, and only when he had the other guy killed, he became the king, but they dated him back a full 20 years. Because otherwise, it's almost impossible to find out where those 20 years are from. We could do it, we could, you know, map it all out, but I don't want to take the time to do it. If you try to map it out, you'll just see that it pays to put him with a co-regency with other kings. And considering the instability, the political instability, it's no surprise. Vayasara b'nei Hashem lo sar mikol chatot Yerav menavar ha-shechti Yisrael. Formulaic, he also does not get rid of ego worship. Bimei Pekach Melech Yisrael, Ba Tiglat Pileser. Now here we go, here's Tiglat Pileser. This is fool. That's the same fool, Tiglat Pileser the third. We know it's not Tiglat Pileser the fourth, because there was no Tiglat Pileser the fourth. There was one, there was two, there was three. His successor will be a guy by the name of Shalmaneser, who will take Hoshea into captive, as we'll soon see. These are the end of Tiglat Pileser's days. Melech Ashur v'yikach et Iyun v'et Avel v'et Macha v'et Yanoch v'et Kedesh v'et Chatzor v'et Gilad v'et Aglila v'kol Eretz Naphtali v'yagleim Ashura. So don't think that the exile all happened in one shot. This is actually about 10 or so years before the exile of all of the 10 tribes, but some of the 10 tribes clearly went before the other ones. What's interesting here is we don't know where they went to. We'll see the other 10 tribes, and we'll get to it in a few minutes. We do know where they go to. We know what cities they were settled in, but these were simply destroyed. All of Naphtali at this point was destroyed. All of the land, what you're looking at is Chatzor, which you probably know is right in between as you're going up into the... Chatzor is right, it's north of Yam Kinneret, before you go up into the mountains of the Golan Heights. Yanoach, Kadesh. Kadesh is also a city up north. Right, right. But the mountains start to really take off. The mountain is actually in modern day. There's Chatzur Elit and there's Chatzur Tachdit. So it's actually you have two cities. One is low and one is high. But Evet Gilad, he takes the whole Ramat Golan. So much for the bribe that. Now, what happened? I thought he was bribed by Menachem, who paid him 3 tons of silver. Maybe Menachem ben Gadi said, maybe Pekah said, I don't need your stinking silver. And we'll see why not in a second.
Wait a minute, what?
Pekah is now the king of Israel.
Right.
But the same fool who is also taking up Pileser comes and destroys Pekah's territory. He takes away the Ramat Golan and the northern Galil. So the question is, why didn't he respect the 3 million... The humongous amount of silver that he was paid off.
Well, there wasn't Pekah to give to him.
That's correct. So it could be all deals were off. Could be Pekah didn't want to. And what we'll see, hopefully, in the next few minutes, is that there's another player around that's almost never mentioned, but they're going to start being mentioned again. If your enemy is Ashur, and you want to fight against this enemy, you could turn to Syria, but Syria is not the most powerful. They got the same problems you have. What's the other superpower that you're going to balance against the superpower of Ashur?
Mitzrayim.
Exactly right. Yeah. Mitzrayim. And that's why things are going to go to heck. Because Mitzrayim is the place. You're going to see in Yirmiyahu, he keeps begging them not to go down to Mitzrayim. But if you were living there at the time, you must be thinking, listen, Ashur are these terrible, vicious, killing people, which they were. Let's go to Mitzrayim. The worst they'll do is enslave us. It beats being put up on poles, which is what was going on during Ashur. Ashur was the most brutal. There was nobody even, their terrorist policy was unbelievable. They used to put people up on pikes, on 50-foot pikes, so everybody could see what was going on. They used to rip people apart. It was gruesome what they did. Mitzrayim did nothing of the kind. It was a much safer bet. Yeah, it was crucified. What they took these big poles. Like, that's actually what happened with, everybody always imagines that Haman was hanged like from the neck, like a Western, but that's not what it was. I have pictures. Unfortunately, the books aren't here. We have pictures because we have stone cuttings that they made at the time. What they did was they sharpened the pike and they stuck it into the person and they lift them up like a human shish kebab. That's what it meant. That's why the eighth was 50 foot high, because it was essentially like a billboard ad as you're coming into New York City, all those billboard ads, and they would stick people up. They wouldn't hang by rope. They hung by whatever they
were,
like a human by their bodies, a human shish kebab. They were terrorists, Ashur. They knew that if you want to conquer a city, put a few heads on, you know, on the wall and people will open up. Mitzrayim never did stuff like that. It just was never had that kind of brutality that, I don't want to say it was a nice government or anything, but Ashur certainly perfected the brutal method of warfare. And people started to say, well, we have another superpower here. Why don't we take a look to the south? But of course, then you get into the problem that you started with the beginning of the book, and that's how the book comes together. Remember, Shlomo's problem started with Paro. And the book will end when the Jews turn back to Paro. So as much as Ashur and Bavel and all these people cause problems, it really wasn't until Paro gets back into business that things start going bad, which is what's going to happen shortly. Verse 30. And now there's a new guy who kills him. Al Pekach ben Remaliah v'akev v'intein v'yemoch tachtav shnat esrim v'yotam ben Uzziahu. So Yotam is in his last year of Yotam's rule. Now Yotam only rules 16 years. So let's not get into the complication there, but there is a difficulty in this text. So Yetid Devei Pekach Chol Asher Asai Nehem Tuvim Al Sefer Devei Yamim Melech Yisrael. And we're almost to the end. So I'll read through it. Bishnat Shnayim Bepekach Ben Ramayahu Melech Yisrael Malach Yotam. Oh, let's skip Yotam. Yotam is the southern king. He's the son of the Judean king. Let's skip him and go to chapter 16. Bishnat Shvasrei Shana LePekach Ben Ramayahu. I'm sorry, let's skip Achaz also. So we're going to skip chapter 16 all the way to... Achaz is the son of Yotam, also a southern king. And we're going to skip to chapter 17. Bishnat Shtemesrei LeAchaz Melech Yehuda. It was in the 12th year of... Now the 12th year, since Yotam ruled for 16 years... and Achaz ruled now for 12, it sounds like it's 28 years later, but it's not. Remember, Yotam rules only in his father's time. So it's actually, I think, only about 6 years after Uzziahu dies. B'shnat Shtem Yisrael Achaz Melech Yehudah Malach Hoshea Ben Elash B'shomro Yisrael Teisha Shani ruled for 9 years. V'yas Hara B'nei Hashem Rak Lo K'malachi Yisrael Asher Yufanav. He does bad in the eyes of God, but not as bad as the other people. Now, what does that mean? Maybe he wiped out the Bamot. Maybe he didn't allow people to go to the Egel, but he allowed them to do the Bamot. Hard to say. But the bottom line is, according to the Navi, he's not as bad. Alav Allah Shalmaneser Melech Ashur Vayihi Lo Hoshea Eved. And he served, that is, Shalmaneser, the son of Tiglath-Pileser, actually I'm not sure he's the son, but the inheritor of the Assyrian kingdom comes, Vayashev Lo Mincha, and he gives him property, tribute. Vayimsa Melech Ashur Bo Hoshea Kesher. And they find that Melech Ashur is cheating on Hoshea is cheating on the Assyrian king Kesher Asher Shalach Malachim El So Melech Mitzrayim V'lo Heler Mincha LeMelech Ashur Kesha B'Shana V'Yatreyu Melech Ashur V'Yatreyu B'Veit Kela. So they come up and they exile him and they put him in jail. Why did he come and do that? Because Hoshea decided to hook up with the with Mitzrayim. So he comes up, he puts him in jail.
Why didn't they just kill him?
What?
Why didn't they just kill him? Let's put him in jail.
I think that was done quite often. The idea is that you would reestablish his kids, but they would be more faithful to you. You didn't want to wipe out I don't know for sure, but I think they didn't want to really... I think it was against the interest of Ashur and other people to have total instability. I guess Hoshea was a popular guy. If they took Hoshea in chains and just said, listen, because of what you did, but when your son gets old enough, we'll put him back on the throne, you managed to keep a little bit of loyalty in the local connection. There's another reason, by the way. They had a hard... I don't know. I don't know completely know the answer to that question. By the way, there's documentation for this also, external to the Torah. Vayal Melech Ashur b'chol ha'aretz vayal Shomron. Now it sounds like the same king that is Shalmaneser is attacking Shomron. Vayatzar aleh shalosh shanim, he attacks him for 3 years. V'shnat atshi loshea lachad Melech Ashur b'shomron vayagel Yisrael Ashur vayeshev vayoshev otam b'chlach u'b'chavur nahar gozen v'arei madai. So first of all, it was a trick. He didn't make it 9 years. He made it 6 years. And then he sat 3 years in jail while another king conquered it. Now, what's interesting is they don't tell you who the king is. One just assumes that it's the same Shalmaneser, but it's not. It's Sargon the Great. Sargon the Second. We only know this from external documentation. And then Navi, he sort of hides. I don't want to talk about the other king for whatever reason. The Jews actually thought they had a chance because what happened is Shalmaneser died in battle. When the king dies in battle, everybody thinks that that king's not, it's bad luck. So his son takes over, so Sargon II takes over, and Sargon has two choices. He could either attack the south, because he's having problems in Iran, or he could attack the north and go against Israel and go against Syria. They had him bet on staying away from the north, because his father had died in the north, battling Israel and Syria, the whole group, but he didn't. He ignored the southern front, and he came right away to Israel, and he wiped out Shomron. Shomron thought that they would leave him alone. Sargon
II. The king of
Ashur. Yeah, the son of Shalmaneser, I believe the son of. Anyway, but that's it. I'll read the pasuk again. B'shnat atshiit loshea lachad melech Ashur et Shomron, vayagel Yisrael Ashura. He exiled all of Israel, which means the rest of the 10 tribes. Vayoshev otam bachlach, and we know where he put them, by the way. They weren't lost at all. They put them in a city called Bachlach, in Chabor, in the Har Gozen, v'arei Madai, and in Media, where we would later show up in Mordechai's time. And that's it. The rest of the chapter discusses why Yirmiyahu essentially, well, probably wasn't Yirmiyahu, it was probably the Navi at the time, giving the Musar Shmuz about why the northern kingdom fell. But that's it. The city of Shomron falls, the tribes are exiled, and that would be the end of the north for that period of time. It ends all here in chapter 17, verse 6. I don't mean to leave everybody off on a bummer, but there it is.